The screen opens up, revealing static. The static transforms into the text HBO Entertainment against a black background. Fragments come together to make a logo. HBO Documentary Films. Words appear on a black background. HBO Documentary Films presents. A Lightbox Production. In association with the American Black Film Festival and Nightbrain Pictures. At night, cars pass along the narrow streets of a city block, Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. A traffic light turns from green to red.
Police 773 on Bayway Avenue and 20th Avenue. Somebody just got shot. Somebody just got shot. A bunch of white boys just shot a black guy.
A Polaroid of a sidewalk that runs along a brick building.
Where are the people that did it?
Photos lead to a grocery store.
They just ran around the corner on 68th Street. They were on foot. A bunch of white boys.
Thank you. Police will be there. EMS will be notified.
In daylight, an older man in a burgundy dress shirt ambles by the brick building.
There are certain calls that you never forget. This was one of the bigger ones besides the World Trade Center. When I got here, my tires were smoking.
Gerald Dickens, emergency medical technician.
When I got to about this car here, I saw a body lying right here. His shirt was cut or ripped halfway down his chest. As I opened it, I saw the two bullet holes right over the heart. I later found out his name was Yusuf Hawkins. He looked like a good kid, you know, didn't look like a thug or anything. I felt his pulse was possibly still viable. We packaged him, put him in the ambulance, and then started responding down towards Maimonides Hospital.
An ambulance speeds down a boulevard.
There was a police officer from the 62 precinct riding in the front of the ambulance with me.
Storm clouds loom over the city.
And en route, he told me this is a racial incident. In a sense that there's going to be problems now in the neighborhood.
On a map, a flashing dot travels through a red district. The title appears, Yusuf Hawkins, Storm Over Brooklyn. A district is outlined in white, then turns blue. Words appear over a bustling city, East New York, Brooklyn. Five townhouses are packed together on a street corner, each unit contrasting the other with varying shades of beige.
My grandparents' house was the center.
Three portraits of black boys appear over a quaint two-story home. Darlene Brown, Yusuf's cousin.
Freddie, Yusuf, Amir. They lived downstairs and I lived upstairs.
Felicia Brown, Yusuf's cousin.
They would come up, we would go down. We would sit on the porch, we'd make sure, you know, they didn't go too far when they were young.
Amir Hawkins, Yusuf's brother.
Every barbecue, every birthday, that's where we all met up as a family. 485 Hageman Avenue.
Yusuf's townhouse is in the middle. Luther Sylvester, Yusuf's friend.
I know Yusuf since I was, Jesus, 6 or 7.
Townhouses linked together all along the boulevard.
Amir, Yusuf, and Freddie was outside. We all started playing, and we've been hanging out, playing ball, doing whatever since then.
Christopher Graham.
I moved right next door to Amir, Yusuf, and Freddie. That's how we met, because we was neighbors. And so we seen each other every day, and we hanged out every day. If they wasn't at my house, I was at their house. And Diane, you know, she treated me like her own.
Photos of Yusuf swimming. Diane Hawkins, Yusuf's mother.
The name Yusuf. Where'd that come from?
Well, his father named him that.
Moses Stewart, Yusuf's father.
My sons didn't know their father because Moses was not here. He left when Amir was like 17 months. And then I never heard from him.
He wasn't talked about much, you know. I mean, I thought about him, but, you know.
Freddie Hawkins, Yusuf's older brother.
He haven't ran across my mind that much.
I know people that have their fathers in their lives, or at least seeing, you know, them, you know, their kids every now and then. But, you know, I didn't see him.
It wasn't nothing that made us feel like, you know, we're short of a family, you know, or we're missing out on anything. You know, now one might say, well, you were missing out on something, but we didn't know it.
GPS dots pass over a street.
Mainly it was me, it was Christopher, it was Luther, and it was Yusuf.
A fourth dot joins.
We rode bikes all the time, and we used to ride bikes in Starrite City.
Bike paths intersect in a lush green park. A GPS dot streaks across a city grid.
We rode from East New York to Bedford Stuyvesant. We rode Atlantic Avenue. We'd ride from one side of town to the next.
Prospect Park. We rode everywhere. We even rode across the Brooklyn Bridge to Central Park.
The GPS dot cruises along the outskirts of Central Park. On the opposite end of the map, East New York is highlighted once more.
There was no white people in East New York, you know. We had Dominicans, we had Puerto Ricans, but we didn't have no white people unless they was on drugs or there was undercover police.
The grocery store corner.
So regardless of which way it went, they wasn't going to get messed with, because if there was customers, you don't want to beat them up because you want them to come back. If they're police, you definitely don't want to mess with them.
An old photo of Amir and Yusuf.
Yusuf would get upset if he didn't know where I was, you know. Stay away from trouble, do the right thing. Just what a big brother should be.
Yusuf and his cousin.
Yusuf, he inspired Diane. He inspired his brothers. He had that little spark in him. I saw it early on, especially that picture that you see when he's standing by the gate in front of the house.
Gripping the wrought iron bars.
I'm like, my cousin's going places.
Yusuf wears a Yankees t-shirt with a subtle smile and high top haircut.
I remember one time when we was standing out on the block, and there was a friend across the street named Ronnie. And you know, ain't no telling what Ronnie would have ate. And it was like some peanuts or some old candy that was on the concrete. And Yusuf went over there, he just started stomping it out, crushing it up. So I said, Yusuf, what you doing? He was like, I'm stomping this out because somebody here would eat off you know, the street. That's the kind of person Yusuf was. He knew that if he would have left it down there, everybody would have went up about their way, that Ronnie would have probably came back and ate that, because, like I said, there was no silver spoons in East New York back then. But some people were just going through it worse than others.
A photo shows Yusuf sitting in front of the gate with his fingers laced. On a bridge, vandalized subway cars pass each other. Reverend Conrad Tillard, activist.
Well, I was transferred to New York in June of 1988. At the time, I was the national student and youth minister for the Nation of Islam. And of course, the Nation represented the Black nationalist movement, the more militant aspect of the traditional civil rights movement.
The mode of operation of the white man is to throw the rock.
I had not been in New York a very long time before the Yusuf Hawkins tragedy took place.
A train tagged with graffiti cruises down a track.
In the 1980s in New York, the racial divisions were over the top. This sort of continuing cycle of police murders and racial crime.
Over the past 8 years, the number of reported racial attacks in New York City has increased dramatically.
Police say three black men were savagely beaten by a gang of white attackers at Howard Beach. One of the victims, a 23-year-old construction worker, was chased to his death.
People in this post-Obama era want to look at the New York in the 80s and 90s in the lens of today, just don't quite understand the climate here.
Is there a lot of crime here?
There is, against the whites by the blacks, and that's why they're not welcome here any longer. Mm-hmm. If they'd behave themselves in this neighborhood, maybe they could walk the streets and be free.
Al Sharpton in cuffs.
And it is in that setting that Al Sharpton emerged as the preeminent spokesperson for the anger.
In the name of those that you covered up,
In the name of those that you spat on their graves by questioning whether Eleanor Bumpus caused the cops to kill her, whether Michael Stewart caused the police to beat him to death. Every time a black man or woman came to the bar of justice, you denied him justice. And now you want to know why your opinions don't matter to us? Because you've proven you're not big enough to get past the color of our skin.
A date appears on a black background, 1989. Lights come from the second story of Yusuf's home.
Wilding. New York City police say that it's new teenage slang for rampaging and wolf packs.
A woman jogging in New York Central Park last Wednesday night, raped and nearly beaten to death.
These alleged perpetrators. We always have to say alleged because that's the requirement.
Ed Koch, mayor of New York City.
When those grandmothers say, but he's a good boy, he never did anything, don't you believe it?
Words appear. All five defendants in the Central Park jogger case were found guilty, then proven innocent 13 years later. A rotary phone rings on a coffee table.
I think it was my older cousin, Felicia, took the phone call. And she was like, Moses, who?
A man with a goatee and slight smile.
The three of them were so happy they didn't know what to do with themselves. Their father came back.
Moses stands with his three sons.
I remember when his dad popped up. My house was like, Yusuf, who was that? He's like, that's my dad.
Luther cocks his brow.
I was kind of like, for all the years that I know him, I ain't never seen his father.
Yusuf smirks with his dad's hand on his shoulder.
I saw it. You know, my mom got pretty excited.
How'd you feel about him?
At that time?
Yeah.
Oh, I was head over heels with him.
So my thing was like, is he here to stay? Or are they going to try to make this work again? Because they got these three boys.
Yusuf was like very thrilled to see his father. The high school where he was supposed to go, he went with his father on the tour to see how the school was.
Since he's not here to really speak for himself, what was your understanding as to why he didn't stay to raise his children?
Walter Brown, Moses' friend.
Because he was stupid. You know, because, like, you don't leave your kids.
Amir Hawkins.
I think Moses wanted to fix and or correct any possible, well, any wrongs he might have done, you know, far as the distance of not seeing us for, you know, so many years. He returned in that January of 1989. So what, from January to August, what, 8 months? 8 months before that happened to Yusuf.
Several months pass on the calendar year of 1989, settling on August. A date appears over a black background.
The day everything happened was August 23rd, 1989, a Wednesday.
A maple leaf sits at the center of a basketball court.
It was like a typical day. We was at 213 Park. Yusuf was pretty good. He was hard to guard because he was a lefty. After that, you know, we went to Chinese restaurant on New Lots Avenue.
Yusuf's favorite was the four chicken wings and pork fried rice. That was the go-to.
I said to Yusuf and Emir that I got a couple of movies at the house that I rented.
And we was actually watching a movie. We was actually watching Mississippi Burning.
And Naked Gun.
A Blockbuster VHS case.
About 5-10 minutes later, Troy came to the house.
A neighbor.
Troy and Claude used to live in the same building where Christopher lived at.
The lights are dim at Yusuf's.
Troy came downstairs
and said, what are y'all doing right now? I said, no, we just chilling here watching a movie.
He wants to go take a look at a used car he seen in a newspaper ad.
It was a Pontiac. He said, I like it. He was like, man, I want to go check it out. Like, he had called the person, got the directions.
He was like, well, you know what I'm saying, I'm about to go down to Bensonhurst to look at this car. Y'all want to come?
The district of Bensonhurst is deep red on the map. The Honeymooners intro plays.
We didn't know anything about Bensonhurst other than
Jackie Gleason
watching a sitcom.
The Honeymooners.
One might say, well, what do you know about the Honeymooners? I love the Honeymooners. I used to watch them all the time. I actually have a DVD set of all of the Honeymooner episodes.
Ralph and Ed in the kitchen.
How do you do, folks? This is smiling Ed Norton talking to you direct from the training quarters of the Bensonhurst bomber.
Amir taps his head.
Holy crap, that's where I remember it from. Didn't know anything about the area.
I said, okay, yeah, we'll go.
So then me and Chris said, well, hey, we got to take this video back to the video store. They were supposed to wait for us, you know, in the neighborhood on the block until we got back.
A car passes by Yusuf's house at night.
He was sitting on the porch. Me, Troy, Claude, and Yusuf. Troy went in, came back out. And he was like, my pops won't take us. It's too late. And I was like, oh. I was like, oh, well. Troy was like, no. I just want to go and come back on the train. I'm like, why don't we wait for Chris and Amir? He's like, by the time they get back, it's going to be too late.
When we came back to the block,
they already had left. We really didn't know where they went, what train they took. So we were just there in limbo, just, okay, we'll just wait till they come back.
A train car departs from a station. Rosalie Hawkins, Yusuf's grandmother.
I don't think I've ever seen my grandmother that upset, that frustrated, that angry, or however you want to phrase it. Because I specifically remember a set of words she said because she was, you know, from an older generation. She experienced, you know, racism way before I even knew what it was or way before I could even understand it.
The train moves across a bridge over the city.
She said, if I would have known that boy was going out there, I would have told him, no, you ain't going out there. But of course, you know, we're thinking, well, we're free to roam. And hey, all they're going to do is look at a used car and an ad of a newspaper. It's a different side of town, but, you know, nobody ever told us, hey, that's off limits. You can't go over there. And that pretty much was the last time I actually seen Yusuf. You know, seen him alive.
The train continues down the track out of view. Words appear over a densely populated city, Bensonhurst, Brooklyn.
It was about 3 o'clock. I came home from work.
Joey Fama, Bensonhurst resident.
I took a shower. I was working with my father. He was my foreman on the construction job.
65th Street and 20th Avenue.
And I went to go return a video at the video store. On the way home, I seen two guys on the corner, and they said that there was going to be a beef on 68th Street and 20th Avenue. So when I heard there was going to be a beef, I went to the candy store on the side of the block. It was called Snacks and Candy.
Snacks and Candy is on the southeast corner of 68th and 20th. Russell Gibbons, Bensonhurst resident.
It was just a regular night. We were hanging out at the schoolyard. That was our, you know, that was our place.
The schoolyard is half a block from the shop.
And we had a big radio, you know. We were listening to music. Word had spread that Gina had made a threat against Keith.
An Italian woman and man.
To bring some dudes into the neighborhood to do some damage to Keith or anybody that was around there. We were told that it was Black and Hispanic people that were coming to the neighborhood. It was basically a way to identify, you know, people that were coming to the neighborhood. And personally, I wasn't thinking about race. I was just there because my friends were there.
Videotape shows the corner grocery store across from the intersection of 68th and 20th.
After I was born, my parents moved me into Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. My father, he looked at it as an opportunity for his children to get a better education. At that time, I guess he could see that, you know, the Black neighborhoods and the white neighborhoods were much different in terms of how they were treated economically, how they were treated, you know, socially.
Pedestrians mill about on a gloomy day.
Growing up, people that still were raised with that segregation mentality, you know, called me names. You know, they called me nigger and, you know, can't be here. So here I am, you know, trying to figure this out on my own.
A portrait of young Russell in a suit and tie.
I was a black kid in a white neighborhood, and I wanted to be a white kid in a white neighborhood.
An Italian man smiles with a woman and a girl.
My father's an immigrant. He came to this country with nothing.
Photos of Joey's family.
We lived in a neighborhood where there was a lot of, you know, Italian Americans.
Joey dancing with his mom.
And as far as racism, I I've really never seen it, you know? And that's basically it.
An NYPD recording on August 24th, 1989 of Pasquale Little Pat Rauchi.
What's your name, please?
Pasquale D. Rauchi.
Where were you last night, August 23rd? Did you get 16th?
Mm-hmm. I went to the candy store. There was a couple of people standing outside.
When I see my friends there at the candy store, I asked them what was going on. And they says, it's Gina's birthday party, and she's inviting blacks to the birthday party, and she's supposed to be dating somebody, you know, one of the black guys. So I says, this beef has to do with you? And he says, no. So I said, you know, let's get out of here.
Were there other people around?
Yeah, by the schoolyard.
By the schoolyard?
Mm-hmm.
Dozens of red dots appear across the schoolyard.
So as we were getting in the car, somebody says, they're here, the black guys are here. So we got out of the car.
Between 63rd and 64th is the 20th Avenue subway station, an NYPD witness statement with Luther Sylvester.
You came to Brooklyn, to Bensonhurst tonight on the N train, right?
Yeah.
And you got off 20th Avenue.
Uh-huh.
What happened after that?
I was with Troy, Claude, and Yusuf. All of us got off the train. When we got off the train, we went upstairs and we asked somebody for directions.
Parked cars line 20th Avenue as it intersects with 68th Street.
We walked about to Dr. Saul, went into the grocery store.
Claude Stanford speaks.
I bought Chris and Abby's and film, and Lucek bought a Snickers bar. We started walking down the street.
Three GPS dots and a fourth hollow one meet at the street corner. An NYPD witness statement with Gina Feliciano.
Miss Feliciano, could you please raise your right hand? Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you, Miss Feliciano. You can present your right hand.
Gina lived in an apartment above Snacks and Candy.
You're looking at your window. Which side? The window, 68th or 20th?
68.
Her apartment runs parallel to 68th Street.
Okay, so the four black guys, you see them walking down 20th Avenue. And what did you see them do?
So he was looking up, I guess, for the address or something. And they thought he was looking...
They being all the members outside.
Right.
Right.
Probably figured he was looking for my address.
For your part.
Yeah. So they go... So he turns around and he goes, John Leto, these fucking niggas in his neighborhood. I told them, now she's gonna learn.
Shaky footage shows an empty basketball court at the schoolyard. Russell speaks.
I think someone had said that they're here. And I was sitting there. I'm sitting there with the radio, and everybody went running.
Red dots pour out from the schoolyard.
For some reason, there was a group of us that stayed back because we just didn't take it. We didn't take it seriously.
A group of five stay behind.
A group dispersed from the schoolyard. They went by the corner, and they said, there's those niggas, something like that.
Did they have anything in their hands?
A couple did.
They have
bats.
Forensic photos of metal pipes and baseball bats.
There was the first group that ran around the corner, and we was towards the back. There was a lady on the corner with her. She had two small kids. She was by the payphone.
A witness statement from Irene DeSerio.
Ms. DeSerio, where were you at approximately 9:25?
I was on the corner of 69th and 23rd. Ready to make a phone call.
She was getting in the phone call.
Right.
Okay, and what happened?
I see a bunch of guys come around the corner. There was about 30 or 40 of them. And all I seen was two guys, you know, that was ahead of them, Joey and Keith.
The names Keith and Joe are highlighted.
What happened after that?
As he stopped, a bunch of white guys came around from around the corner and surrounded us.
A mob of red dots surround three blue, while a fourth blue dot is further down the block.
What were they carrying, if anything?
Baseball bats.
Okay, what happened after they surrounded you?
They started shaking their bats, saying, "Is this them? Is this them?"
Two red dots close in on Yusuf. Luther stares off for a moment.
So they yelling. They still banging the bats. Like, what y'all doing here? What y'all niggas doing here? Oh, y'all trying to talk to our girl? I'm like, the hell you talking about? I'm looking at Yusuf like, all right, we might have to find our way out of here, but we're going to get our ass beat. Next thing I know, I hear gunshots from diagonally from behind me. Everybody that surrounded us took off. Yusuf come out the doorway holding his heart and just backs up and falls.
Words appear on a black background. Neither Luther, Claude, nor Troy could positively identify the shooter. A photo of Yusuf catatonic on the sidewalk as paramedics tend to his gunshot wound. Light comes from the second-story window of Yusuf's townhouse.
I was home at my house with my oldest son, Freddie, and his father. My sister knocked on the door. And the first thing she just said, Yusuf got hurt. I ain't get the Medicaid card.
A vehicle cruises through Bensonhurst.
In my mind, I said, oh, probably got hurt out there playing basketball or something like that. As we're driving along, because it's taking too long to get to the hospital, in my mind, it's like, I know something is really not right.
Tearful, Diane shakes her head. Christopher speaks.
Me, Amir, Walter, we went down to the hospital to see what was going on.
We was the first ones there. So when we got there, you know, of course, straight to the point, the doctor said, well, where's the immediate family? Where's the mom? Where's the dad? Because obviously I was 14 at the time. They're not going to tell me anything.
An emergency room.
So once they showed up, doctors took them into a room somewhere. So we're all in the waiting area. And
doctor came in the room. Me and my older sister was in there and Moses. And the doctor just came in the room. He said, your son is dead, just like that.
Diane arches her brow.
When the door opened, I'm looking, and I watch my mom drop to the floor. I can still picture her face, you know, and I knew it was over.
Diane breaks down in tears.
I can just imagine. Oh, my God. And for a long time, I wasn't there. But in my mind, I could just see him in the street. It'd be so bad. Right now, I can still picture him. It's just craziness. This shouldn't have never happened to him because he didn't bother anyone. So I'm like, God, I know he'd probably be like, what the hell somebody done this to me for? You know, in his mind, the little bit of life he still had.
A black and white photo from the crime scene. Yusuf's mouth hangs open as his eyes are nearly shut. A gurney's wheeled through an emergency room.
So then they finally they gave us the clearance to go back to see him after they did what they did. And you know, I was on the way. Me and Chris was on the way back to the room, and halfway down the hall, I stopped. Chris said, oh, what's wrong? You're going? I couldn't do it. I stopped, and Chris took the lead for me. And Chris went. So, you know, I say we grew up as friends, but Chris is basically, he's family.
In an ICU, harsh surgical lights loom over a bed as a patient monitor flatlines.
I was just at the point, well, you know, I ain't really, you know, want to go, but I got to see. I got to see with my own eyes. And I just went in there and looked at his face. Yeah, you know, I might have stayed in there maybe 2-3 minutes just looking at him before I left.
A dark red boot print marks the floor of the hospital room.
You know, we were just, we wanted answers. You know, why did this happen, you know? When the lead detective came in, I forgot his name, he said to us that keep this quiet because he doesn't want to riot in the city.
Christopher closes his eyes as he nods.
And I said, okay. But the next day, Yusuf's picture was on the front page.
Yusuf on a stretcher.
So, I mean, that's something that you couldn't keep quiet.
A mostly black crowd congregates outside Yusuf's townhouse. A date appears on a black background. August 24th, 1989. Rosalie Hawkins, Yusuf's grandmother, stands on the porch.
16-year-old, my grandson. Shut down. Shut down your own blood. My grandson.
Felicia frowns with folded arms. In a crowd nearby is Amir, Freddie, and Christopher.
I can't believe this. I can't believe this. Like, my brother's dead.
Freddie frowns and shakes his head.
You know?
A younger Diane stares off with a forlorn expression. Walter speaks.
You know, you don't know what you would do until something happened to you. Something that you wouldn't do at all turns around and you do everything. Nobody knows what it is until something happened to your child, what you would do.
Moses is somber with Diane under his arm.
I'm 23 months, but I would like to take the opportunity that's being provided to this family to tell that this is not just our problem anymore. This is black people's problem in general. And it didn't start with my son being murdered in Bensonhurst. It started somewhere in the area 400 years ago. My son has been tried, found guilty, and executed all in one day, in less than an hour's time, for nothing, only because of the color of his skin. And I just want to ask New York and America as well, when is it going to stop? You know, where do we go?
A train car speeds across a bridge over downtown Brooklyn. Reverend Al Sharpton, social justice activist.
I was home. I was living in downtown Brooklyn. And Anthony Charles, who worked with me then, answered the phone. And he said, there's a Moses Stewart on the phone. I said, who is Moses Stewart? He said, he says he's the father of the kid that got killed in Bensonhurst.
Reverend Sharpton got on the phone. At first, I was in a little disbelief. I kept saying, are you sure this Reverend Sharpton?
And I said, yeah. He said, you sure? I said, yeah. He says, well, there are reporters at my house. And they asked me if I could get anyone that would speak up for my family, who would it be?
And the media could be held responsible for me meeting Reverend Sharpton because they were the ones who gave me his phone number.
I said, well, Mr. Stewart, you really don't want me. You know, I just had this controversial case with Brawley.
Sharpton grabbed the national spotlight when he became the spokesman for Tawana Brawley.
A black 15-year-old raped and abducted, she said, by six white men, one of them with a badge.
Those allegations are untrue. The people who made those allegations lied.
John DeSantis, reporter.
The Tawana Brawley case offered an opportunity for a lot of people in regard to Reverend Sharpton to say, see, I told you so. He's a fake, he's a fraud.
Down, Tawana.
And a congressional...
Black people believed Tawana Brawley. Many black people still believe Tawana Brawley.
A photo of Sharpton with Tawana.
Moses Stewart, he told me, that's why I want you. You won't sell us out. He said, would you come and see me and let's talk about it?
He kept talking and I kept talking and he says, well, I'll see you this afternoon. So I hung up the phone and I told Diane, I says, well, Reverend Sharpton, if that was Reverend Sharpton, say he's going to be here this afternoon.
In front of Yusuf's home, Sharpton joins hands with the local community.
Let us pray.
He and Yusuf's family close their eyes and bow their heads.
Dear God, we come again with a bereaved family, victims of a society that has not adjusted to learn how to live with each other. We come first asking you to forgive us, for all of us have played a role in this society that is imperfect and unjust. And here we stand with a family that was not activists, that were not politicians, that didn't hurt anybody. A religious and praying grandmother, a humble and hardworking mother, a diligent and hardworking and intelligent father, whose son is gone now. Two brothers left not knowing what to say or what to do. We ask you to give us the strength this week to not go for the emotions, not to go just for bitterness, that's the easy way out, but to use Yusuf's death as a way to stop this madness once and for all. And we say, Lord, take care of Yusuf. We didn't do what we should have to take care of him, so you've got him now. Look out for Yusuf. Tell him we're sorry that we didn't protect him better. Tell him we're sorry we didn't build a better world for him. Take care of our brother, and we will try to make sure that his brothers that he left behind will not ever face the same fate.
Diane covers her mouth as she weeps under Moses' arm.
One day, Diane and her mother told me the whole story about Moses having not been there a lot.
Diane's face is in Moses' chest.
And at one level, I thought about how my father had left me.
A childhood photo of Sharpton nicely dressed with his family.
And I understood the feeling of abandonment that Diane felt, because that was my mother's feeling. And I understood Mrs. Hawkins, who had to provide them with a home. But I also understand that sometimes you got to let a man redeem himself.
With Sharpton at his side, Moses stares off blankly as his arms hang over the front gate.
He deserved a chance to fight for his son, to make up for whatever he wasn't there for with his son.
The black community converges outside Yusuf's home.
I didn't sleep in my house for a while. You know, I was, you know, next door, and, you know, we going through the motions, you know, all day emotional roller coasters.
Floods of reporters, everybody has questions. I didn't really understand what was going on. You know, a bunch of activists and stuff like this.
A black man in a suit and sunglasses speaks, Minister Conrad Muhammad.
I bring to the family a pledge of love and support and sympathy, of course, from my leader and teacher, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan. We feel that the wanton and indiscriminate murder of this black brother of ours is exemplary of the attitude that exists in America.
I don't really know how to deal with all of that. All I know is, oh, some white boys killed my brother because they felt like he shouldn't have been on a certain side of town. So now I'm trying to process, well, why is that?
Mayor Ed Koch waves to citizens as he enters a police station. Inside, Benjamin Ward, police commissioner, speaks to the press.
Are we ready? We are making it a bias incident. And as I said earlier, the word nigger was used.
Not acceptable, whether it was just a simple bias case or a bias case complicated with a matter of a spurned lover.
The white youths thought he was dating a white girl from their neighborhood.
A mistaken belief, one of them was dating a local white girl.
Con la exnovia de un muchacho blanco.
They were trying to, in the media, act as though Yusuf was killed with some love triangle.
A headline, Death, Hate, and Jealousy.
Yusuf didn't know anybody to date down there. None of them. They went down there for a car and not to date any white girls.
White people stroll the intersection of the shooting.
We all knew Bensoners that lived in Brooklyn, knew this was race. His friend said it was race. But it was this little debate in the press. Was it love triangle? Was it race? So I said to them, we should go out there and march in that neighborhood, and it'll be clear.
Is there racial tension in this neighborhood?
No, it ain't racist. Everybody blows out of proportion. It's not racism.
It's not racial.
These things happen, you know, but don't make a big deal out of it, because now if you make a big deal, and you know what's going to happen, they're going to come down, and we're going to start, they're going to start, and there's going to be a big thing, right? So if we keep it low and forget about it, you know, maybe it'll just die down.
Footage shows the local businesses in Bensonhurst, an Italian bakery, a meat and pork store, and a coffee house. Police direct traffic to turn away from a commotion that's occurring up ahead. A date appears on a black background, August 26, 1989. A photo captures Sharpton with Yusuf's brothers and Minister Conrad.
Reverend Sharpton felt that Diane and I shouldn't make that march, not so soon after our son had been murdered. And we had to prepare for a funeral. But my two sons, Amir and Freddie, went on that very march. And the things that they told me went on out there, I said, well, you'll never go out there without me again.
Italians watched the protest.
When we arrived there, we seen a lot of the neighborhood people out there. They looked like they was, you know, ready to, you know, fight. And it was real intense.
The white media backs away as Sharpton and the black community march arm in arm across the schoolyard.
A man pick up crowd.
My brother's death went down, you know. People was yelling out his name.
The protesters take to the streets. A crowd of Italians rattle a police barricade. A subtitle, that's what Al Sharpton is, he's a bullshit and liar.
They did not want us there at all. They did not want us there. And they made that known.
Get the fuck out of here!
Get the goddamn neighborhood!
Come on, motherfucker! Fucking asshole!
My best friend lost his life on these streets, and we're gonna let them know that we're not just gonna go away quietly.
The parade of black protesters is contested by a riotous white mob. A cop holds back an Italian man. Police are caught in the middle as the black and white groups clash. The black protesters continue their march through the neighborhood. A black man shakes his fist. Italians and blacks clash. From a window above, a white man flips the protesters off.
I had never, I guess maybe because I was born in the North, but I had never seen such unrefined, open hate in my life.
A photo of Italian men with a watermelon that reads, Reverend Al, you fat bastard.
Yusuf Hawkins took away this veneer they had gotten away with to the world as the cosmopolitan New York.
This is not a racist community. We just don't like black people.
Rednecks down south are like this. Bensonhurst made people say, what? New York is like that?
A mob of Italians include one man holding up a watermelon. In a crowd, two white men wave the Bennington flag.
When somebody say, hey, I'm not racist. Okay, you're not racist, but I'm watching a 9-year-old little boy and girl stick this middle finger up at me and say, go home, you and you so-and-so-and-so. So I don't think people are born like that. That's something that's taught. You get showed that kind of stuff.
At the crime scene, bloodstains and a baseball bat lie on the sidewalk. Detective Joseph Regina, NYPD.
In August of 89, I was sitting in the office, and we got a call from the 6-2 Precinct Detective Squad that they had a murder. They had a homicide.
Police on 20th Avenue.
We had a young black man shot and killed, supposedly by a group of young white youths. And we had to get to the bottom of this. What happened?
Cops deliberate outside the snacks and candy shop.
People that were involved, we We knew that they hung out in a candy store around the corner.
A photocopy of a police report with the shop address.
We retrieved a collage from that candy store. You know, you're hanging out, take a picture, they put it up there. And we were able to identify almost every person on that collage. And we then scanned the neighborhood, caught a couple of young guys, and brought them in for an interview.
A document with the subject, interview of Keith Mondello.
My lieutenants told me in the 6-2, go over to 6-1. They brought Keith in, go interview him.
An Italian teen.
And once we broke the ice, I'm so-and-so, this is so-and-so, and blah, blah, blah. I started the interview, and that's when he got a little crusty. I said, listen, I was born in a neighborhood where you don't talk to the cops. You know, you don't talk to nobody. I said, listen, Keith, you know, you're a tough kid out in the street, you know, but when you go to Rikers, you're not going to be that tough, and you're going to be somebody's wife. And while you're out getting banged by some guy in prison, I'm going to be taking your girlfriend out for a date. That's the reality, my friend. That's the reality. And he looked at me, and he just, okay, I got you.
Gina's name is highlighted.
That's when I found out about the relationship with the girl, Gina Feliciano.
Gina, a curly-haired brunette, smirks as she walks hand-in-hand with two white men. Words appear. In his statement, Keith Mondello claimed that Gina Feliciano had invited 20 to 25 blacks to Bensonhurst to brawl with him and his friends. Keith's statement reads, I then went out and gathered a few friends. Mondello confessed to organizing the group that confronted Yusuf and his friends, believing they were the blacks Gina had invited. In her statement, Gina Feliciano denied threatening Keith Mondello.
Keith passed me, he goes, I should spit in your face. So I said, what are you talking about, Keith? And he turns around, he goes, you're a nigger lover. Because I don't want niggers and spits in this neighborhood for you or for anybody.
Text continues. She claimed that it was Keith and his friends who had made explicit threats, warning Gina not to invite her black friends, one of whom she was dating, to her birthday party on August 23rd.
They were expecting that your friends to be a party with me.
That's why they were all waiting by my house. And then little Pat passed by, and I says, Pat, what's these people? She goes, well, they don't want niggas and spits in the neighborhood. That's the way it's going to be. They ain't going to have it.
Pasquale is interviewed.
What about Gina? Do you know Gina?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, do you know people have problems with friends?
A lot of people do.
Do you know if there have been problems in the past over there with black people?
No, not really.
Do you know if any of your friends have problems or any of them don't like black people being there?
No, it was just that they started to hang out on a small basis, and then they were there every night. And then when we walked by, they would give us dirty looks and say things to us. And it's just, you know, we didn't want that to happen, but, you know, we didn't want to kill them.
Reverend Jesse Jackson is surrounded by black colleagues as he speaks to the press.
People should be able to march anywhere and live anywhere and go anywhere and not have their lives threatened because of their race. It's so reminiscent of Emmett Till being killed on a race, sex motivated lynching in Mississippi in 1955. And there is a politics of racial division in the city. And we would hope that leaders, political leaders who care, will stand tall and declare that this madness must end.
David Dinkins, mayoral nominee.
Clearly, one of the prime concerns that all of us have or should have is race relations in our city.
The murder of Yusuf Hawkins, it got at the core of
Ken Sunshine.
There's something wrong with society, and frankly, it's time for an African American mayor.
I've said throughout this campaign, indeed throughout the primary, that New York City is not the melting pot that I was taught it was when I went to grammar school in Harlem a long time ago. It's instead a gorgeous mosaic of persons of varying ethnic backgrounds and religions. And I say we need to reach out and try to understand the backgrounds and heritages of other peoples, hopefully to come to love one another, but if not that, to understand one another, and with that understanding will come respect.
Dinkins greets people.
It was in Dinkins' nature and character to believe in racial reconciliation.
He hugs a woman.
He touted New York as not being disparate and divided, but rather being a gorgeous mosaic of cultures and peoples. The only problem with that was that was sort of out of touch with the attitudes that existed in the African-American community. It was a period when African Americans were experiencing a revival of black awareness, black consciousness.
A Professor X music video.
Particularly in Harlem and Bedford-Stuyvesant.
A clip from Do the Right Thing.
By 89, it was the era of Public Enemy and Do the Right Thing.
Bugging Out goes to the mayor.
The mayor, we need your leadership.
Doctor, what are you talking about?
I'm organizing a boycott of South Famous.
Shit. Hey, keep walking, Doctor. I don't want to hear none of your damn black foolishness.
Damn.
Reverend Herbert Daughtry.
At that point, Dave Jenkins, he had not succeeded in inspiring the masses. So we discussed whether or not Dave Jenkins should visit Yusef Hawkins' family.
I would hope that in this election, which only has, what, 2-3 weeks to go, that no one will seek to get political benefit from a tragedy.
The Manhattan Borough president doesn't usually visit the home of murder victims in Brooklyn, but David Dinkins wants to be mayor.
You know, I didn't know anything about these people. Here you had them in your living room. Dinkins' response, if I'm not mistaken, was an election was coming up and we need to get out and vote and, you know, get me into office and I can do what I need to do to, you know, for my people and this, that, and the other.
After a half-hour meeting with the dead youth's family and Reverend Al Sharpton, David Dinkins told how he believes Yusef Hawkins' killing relates to the race for mayor.
I don't blame the mayor or any individual for this circumstance, except to say all of us, each one of us, bears some responsibility for trying to make a better city.
I knew that the attacks against Yusef Hawkins should be a factor in my contest, but I like to believe that we treated it as we would have had I not been seeking public office.
I'm not happy that we have the divisions that we have, and I want to heal them. I want to bind up the wounds. This is one of the reasons I run for office.
Al Sharpton.
Moses didn't want to get into the politics at all. He said, let Dave Dinkins, I don't give a damn about Dave Dinkins. I'm talking about my son. I'm talking about justice.
My son will never turn this corner again.
No, he
only because of this, the pigment of his skin. Do you understand that? This is what America must learn, that we are no longer going to take this.
Reverend Al Sharpton and my father, I think their goal was to set out for justice.
Moses exclaims in front of his home.
Somebody's going to pay for this. Somebody needs to pay for it.
Five teenagers use jackets to hide their faces.
Five white teenagers have been arrested so far in this latest racial attack.
They were hustled out of the local police station wearing bulletproof vests after an anonymous caller vowed to, quote, get those guys.
So they're trying to find the man who attacked your son. Were you paying attention to the news at this time?
Yes, I was looking at it. My eyes full of tears and mind just gone. Well, what happened? Why did this happen? Why did they kill my son?
A headline, 30 teens chase, shoot youth.
I just wanted the person that pulled the trigger, really. But then when I heard everything that was going on and how, you know, just the gathering of people and stuff, I kind of wanted all of them to go to jail.
Douglas Najari, Kings County Assistant DA.
Yusef Hawkins and his friends, they walked into what I would call a perfect storm, a group of white kids that had really whipped themselves up into a frenzy because Gina Feliciano had said that her black boyfriend is coming into the neighborhood and there's going to be a riot.
Bloody baseball bats are discarded in a hedge and by a sidewalk.
They didn't want black kids coming into their neighborhood. For some reason, Russell was okay. You know, we know you, so you're okay for a black guy.
Yeah, well, they always got one nigga that they like. Always one nigga that they like. Any racist mob, they always got one nigga that they'll pat on the head and he's okay. So I imagine that's who he was.
Russell shrugs.
Listen, growing up in a white neighborhood, not having any black friends, can't help but deal with an identity crisis. I could block it out as much as I want to. And it's going to end up catching up with me. And it did.
Russell lowers his eyes with a tense jaw. Joseph Russell Gibbons' witness statement.
We met Johnny Mento and told us that there was going to be a fight here tonight. Gene was bringing down 20 of her black and Puerto Rican friends to fight with us.
Where'd you go?
Went to Charles Russell's house.
And what'd you do there?
Picked up the bats and left.
Russell stares ahead with a knitted brow.
You brought the bats?
Yeah, I had the bats. I didn't bring, the bats weren't there for the specific reason, for that specific reason. They were available because of the fact that we were going to play a game that night. It's not like we gave them out and said, here's a bat for you and here's a bat for you. After we got the bats, we walked back to the candy store. Placed the bats down inside. Charlie said, if anyone wants bats, bats are there.
A forensics officer gingerly removes a bat from the crime scene.
The bats were something that held these young men in place. I mean, they couldn't run away. They were surrounded by white kids with bats. There was no place to go.
An outline of Yusuf's body on the sidewalk.
Keith Mondello, Pasquale Rocci, and Charlie Stressler, all charged with assault, riot, aggravated harassment, violation of civil rights, and possession of a weapon. In this case, baseball bats. But it was a gun, not a bat, that killed Yusuf Hawkins Wednesday night. The shooter of that gun is still at large.
A photo of an Italian boy with dark eyebrows.
One of the individuals being sought for questioning in connection with the homicide of Yusuf Hawkins is Joseph Fama of 1773 71st Street, Brooklyn.
Joseph's on the cover of Daily News with a headline, Hunted.
He is described as a male white, 19 years of age, 5'9" tall, medium build, and short black hair.
In the present, Joey peers over his glasses as he reads over pages of handwritten notes. He eventually looks up with a tense jaw.
I gotta just ask you flat out, who killed Yusuf Hawkins?
I don't know who shot Yusuf Hawkins. But it wasn't my friends, and it wasn't me.
Joey swallows hard and fidgets for a moment. In his old photo, he has braces and a neck chain.
I was just a young kid, curious what's going on. Listen, mere presence is not guilt. You know, if that's the case, then 30 other people are guilty.
A cop twirls his baton in a bustling downtown district.
I'm a kid, 18 years old. I was scared. And I went home, changed, and I went upstate. It's crazy. I hitchhiked all the way up to...
A fleet of taxis and cars stop while pedestrians cross.
I was trying to get away as far as possible, from the city.
Joey lowers his eyes.
I know it looks bad, but if you didn't do it, you're trying to get away from the problem,
Joey averts his eyes and headlines appear. Cops press Hunt. High bail for Five and Slay. For Trigger Man, tensions up as marchers, residents trade taunts.
Martin Luther King used to say, you got to make the comfortable uncomfortable. And you got to make the uncomfortable comfortable. You can't let people in the season of killing a black young man in their neighborhood just go through business as usual. And have the false premise, well, that's over with now. We're having our festival. Oh, no, you have your festival. But guess who's coming to the festival?
On Saturday, September 2nd, 1989, Bensonhurst residents prepared to celebrate their annual social and religious festival, the Feast of Santa Rosalia. Sharpton and a parade of black people march in on the festival.
The first march with the venom and the ugliness and the threats, that was steroids.
A rambunctious crowd of Italians. Sharpton's arm in arm with Yusuf's family as the black community marches with a police escort. Aggressive Italians line the street and lean out their windows.
We let them come through once. How many times have they got to destroy?
Whites prance with a watermelon. Dr. Lenora Fulani, psychotherapist and activist.
Some of the behavior out there was just, it's like unbelievable how people acted out. So I don't know if it's the depth of the racism. I know it's ignorance.
Italians yelling at black protesters. That's right.
I think the problem, though, was that the people who aren't involved in being racist pigs,
Sharpton blows kisses,
couldn't get it together enough to make a different kind of statement.
Italians brandish signs like "Defend Friends, Keep Koch Mayor."
This is not a community that should be described as a racist community.
The black community marches on.
I urge that people not engage in marches into communities. And the reason is the community thinks it then is the perpetrator of the violence. And I don't think that any community can be branded that way.
Don't come in here and disturb us!
Let's quit playing with ourselves. Let's not come with denial that, oh, it wasn't me, I didn't see it. And that boy got killed. And the reason we came is we knew that people in that neighborhood knew who did it. And we were right. They gave him up after a few weeks.
Darlene stares off.
They hid him for a good while. But we made so much stink, they had to bring him out.
At night, cars whiz past the crime scene on 20th.
It's a mobbed up neighborhood, Bensonhurst. Everybody knows that.
Law-abiding businesses and illegal businesses were being hurt by these marches. And, you know, mob ruling is, if you're going to hurt us financially, we're going to help solve the case.
A headline, cops press mob.
A meeting was held at Tally's Pool Hall in Bensonhurst. And it was headed up by Sammy the Bull Gravano.
A mugshot of a man in a leather jacket.
When it was said to Gravano that Fama, who was missing, was the person who had shot Yusuf Hawkins, Gravano said, then you have to give him up.
A boy keeps his head down as he's escorted outside.
The teenager who allegedly fired four shots at Hawkins pleaded not guilty to murder after surrendering to police the day before. As one of the teenager's attorneys spoke with reporters, activist Al Sharpton and the victim's father began yelling.
You tear the whole city up to let some...
No, you go. You are. No, I'm not tearing anybody up.
He be tearing the whole city up.
When your clients kill my son,
should have a consequence.
If I'd have killed that redneck, they'd have found should the tree with a rope.
Because of the...
Stephen Murphy, Keith's attorney.
The heat that was coming out of this city. It was like, you know, you're watching the whole city be divided by something.
Black youth shouting.
This was a murder that was shaking the foundations of the city.
Black men burn a cop's hat.
The outrage that a bunch of teenage kids go to get a car and one gets murdered in a very divisive racial climate.
An Italian crowd marches with American flags. A black group carries a casket into a crowd and it gets toppled over. A brutal fight breaks out between black men and the police. Words appear, August 31st. An injured officer is carried off as a bloody black man runs away. A headline reads, "Outrage, cops, marchers, and bloody clash." The photo below shows two cops detaining a black protester.
Yusuf's death was so public. So, you know, you could just be doing your normal routine in life and you see his picture on the newspaper or in a magazine.
A photo of Amir with his family in the black community.
You're not looking at it as that's your life until that becomes your life. You know, you don't expect to be in a dead heart middle of it. You know, it's in your face now. It's sitting right in your own doorstep.
He's with Sharpton, Minister Conrad, and others.
That's when we started getting everybody. Everybody hit my grandmother's house. I couldn't tell what was going on upstairs or downstairs. That's how, you know, I mean, it was like that every day for a long time. We had so many people coming by the house.
Politicians, rappers, actors, I mean, you name it, you had them just coming to the house.
Sharpton's on the porch with Spike Lee and his family. Later, Lee's interviewed by a black film crew.
Whether you want it or not, you're considered a role model in our community. Any advice, considering that racial tensions are strained right now in New York City?
Well, I think that the most important thing we have to do is vote. The primary and election coming up in November and get Koch out of here, because I think that his hand, you could say his finger was on the trigger too. I mean, he's used racial polarization to get elected, and I think his, you know, it's backfired, and now the city is polarized like it's never been.
Police escort a hearse as it inches through a vast, mostly black crowd.
The funeral was enormous.
Diane's among the throng of supporters.
That street was packed.
The road is filled with people surrounding the funeral procession.
We drove in the limo, and we drove up to the church. I couldn't believe how many people were there to support Yusuf and the family. It was unbelievable. It just, I mean, I've never said anything, but everybody that showed up for Yusuf's funeral on that day, it meant everything in the world to me.
You know, everything was so emotional, and everything was just too big to pay attention to.
Yusuf's family arrives at the church where police with rifles keep watch from the rooftop.
This funeral was a place where, you know, Koch had to be.
Black protesters yell at Ed Koch through a chain link fence.
You bum! Dinkins had to be.
Dinkins shakes hands with colleagues and gives a thumbs up to supporters.
Well, Farrakhan's going to be, he's going to be speaking. Well, it's too bad. We may not like him, but this is one of those seminal moments when you have to be there.
Black pallbearers carry Yusuf's casket into the church. Everyone's on their feet in the packed church. Minister Louis Farrakhan.
It is a great honor and privilege for me to have been asked by my brother, the father of Yusuf, to come and share this moment with you. Funeral services are not really for the dead.
That's right.
Funeral services are instructions.
Flowers surround Yusuf's casket at the altar.
God sometimes uses the innocent to give a message to the guilty. He takes the life of one that is pure to save those who are impure. This is not to hurt your feelings. This is not to throw stones. But this is to say to those in power, while power is in your hands, do justice.
Jump to their feet with applause. Outside, supporters pump their fists in the air and begin to march the streets.
Yusuf Hawkins became a symbol of something. He was perceived by many to be a martyr.
Sharpton and fellow reverends lead.
Moses was very comfortable being the person that was in front with Reverend Sharpton locking arms. Diane, Yusuf's mother, never appeared comfortable.
Diane's in tears while holding hands with Sharpton and her family.
Now, if his mother have anything to say, you can talk to her.
Diane shakes her head.
I can't speak. I don't have anything.
How do you feel about this?
Excuse me.
I quietly thank and appreciate all the support that's coming to me from the death of my son, which was a good kid. And it hurts me so bad, and I have nothing else.
I was a lost case. I was like in another planet somewhere. I didn't know what to think. My mind was just focusing on the loss of my son. That was it. I believe I cried for like 6 months straight. I mean, every day. And it made me like afraid of everything, paranoid. I couldn't go to the store by myself. Definitely couldn't ride on the train by myself. I was afraid of everything around me.
A packed subway car takes off through an underground tunnel.
I didn't go back to school for a few days. When I went back to school, everybody knew.
A young Luther wears a medallion of Africa.
I think I didn't make it through my first class before the principal, the guidance counselor, called me in the office and they were talking to me, asking me how I feel, if there's anything they could do for me.
Luther marches with Yusuf's brothers.
I didn't accept the help. I just told them everything was fine and just kept doing what I was doing.
Words appear on a black background, September 12, 1989, primary election day.
If black folks come out in massive numbers on September the 12th and send a proper message, then I think that Yusuf Hawkins will not have died in vain.
This year, New Yorkers might not be particularly interested in positions or plans. After years of growing hostility between the races, they might opt instead for a symbol of reconciliation, of bringing together this divided city, and perhaps providing some peace and quiet.
Dinkins appears on the cover of Daily News. David speaks to supporters from a podium.
I see New York as a gorgeous mosaic of race and religious faith. This administration will never lead by dividing, by setting some of us against the rest of us. I intend to be the mayor of all the people of New York.
Text appears 3 months later. A diverse crowd protests outside a courthouse.
No peace for racism! No peace for racism! No peace for racism!
Listen to the sound, read the headlines, and the message is loud and clear. New York is a city seemingly on the verge of a racial apocalypse. Predictions of riots, should juries find a pair of defendants in the alleged racial killing of Yusuf Hawkins and Bensonhurst not guilty.
We talked, and I tried to prepare them for the worst. I said, I don't care what the DA says. We could walk out of here with nothing. This is a system that doesn't always work. And I think that they were prayerful, but prepared for acquittals. And then we headed to the court.
Words appear on a black background. Six defendants were brought to trial on charges including unlawful imprisonment, menacing, discrimination, weapons possession, and rioting. A courtroom sketch illustrates a group of white men in suits facing a black judge. More text follows. Two of them were also charged with second-degree murder.
On trial at the same time as Joseph Fama, but with a separate jury, is Keith Mondello, also 19. He is accused of organizing the gang that attacked the young blacks.
There was two people on trial, all right? The shooter and basically the person they were characterizing as the ringleader, all right? And, you know, it would be hard to dispute either way the characterization, all right? And I don't think I have really tried to dispute that characterization.
D.A. Rip's ringleader.
Just me being there doesn't say that I'm guilty, okay? And everyone has portrayed me as some racist killer, which I'm not.
If they evaluate the evidence, they'll realize it wasn't a racial case, that it had nothing to do with race.
I don't think anyone would want a lawyer that, when the trial started, saying, yeah, it was racism.
He didn't go there to kill anyone, and he didn't use the bat. He never lifted it off his shoulder.
You'd have to be stupid to not determine that there was a racist element to the whole thing to begin with.
In his opening statement against Mondello, prosecutor James Kohler said the defendant was enraged at a former girlfriend for inviting black and Hispanic boys to her birthday party, and that Mondello threatened to, quote, shoot the niggers. His attorney countered not so much by defending his client, but by attacking the credibility of Mondello's former girlfriend.
Gina's at the stand.
That brought back a lot of hurt, you know, and I didn't want to say it. I was hesitating to say it into the courtroom, but it did come out eventually, but it came out mostly in tears.
Gina Feliciano is the one who caused the whole incident to occur.
Gina's not
no,
on
Gina
trial.
Gina ain't on trial.
She ain't on trial. Mondello is.
Gina Feliciano was the primary witness against Keith Mondello. Stephen Murphy attempted to discredit her testimony as that of a habitual drug user.
Keith Mondello, who they believed was the ringleader, fingered Fama as the gunman. But as a co-defendant, that part of his confession could not be used in Fama's trial.
A primary witness against Joey Fama was Frankie Tig, a neighborhood kid who claimed to see Fama shoot Yusuf.
You testified that you saw Joe Fama shoot the black person.
Yes.
When you testified to it, did you believe it?
No.
If you didn't believe it in your own mind, why did you testify to it?
Frankie Tig made a tape recanting his testimony.
Well, when you said I believed it, I thought I was there, but I found out myself that I wasn't really there at the time. Like maybe because I got a problem, you know, maybe I don't have a problem anymore, but maybe then I had a problem.
When you say then, do you mean in August of 1989?
Yeah, maybe because I just got out of hospital, I wasn't feeling well.
The judge would not allow the tape into evidence.
They couldn't be touched because they were affiliated somewhat with the mob. That's what we were hearing. So there was some intimidation.
Did you see Fama in the courtroom?
Yeah, I did.
What did he look like to you?
Like, he just didn't care. Like, no sense of remorse at all.
A sketch of Keith looking stoic.
When the trial was going on, and they showed those pictures of my son, you know, what happened, stuff like that, I had to leave the courtroom. I couldn't stand there and watch those pictures.
An illustration of jurors arguing before the judge.
I'm telling you that if this case comes out of that courtroom with anything less than six men going to jail, then somebody better tell the devil in hell that Moses Stewart is coming.
Yeah. I'll be right with you.
I didn't have that in me to get out there in the forefront and to speak like Moses and Sharpton.
Mr. Stewart, if I might, have you had a conversation with...
It took a whole, a big toll on me to do those things, but I did do it.
I just like to say I want justice, and God damn it, I demand it because I'm tired of being treated this way. It's very unfair. That's all I have to say.
Yusuf's family marches with the black community.
We would like the mayor and others that have called for racial harmony to show now a commitment to racial justice and to join the family in Bensonhurst on Saturday.
Words appear May 12, 1990, the 7th Bensonhurst March.
I've never been through nothing like that in my life before.
Diane links arms with Sharpton and her family.
What were your thoughts about Yusuf during the march?
We're out here for you. But still, it hurts so bad. But we had to do this. Moses, Sharpton, and I, we had to do this here. To try to get a point across, you know?
Black men pump their fists.
You do not get a gorgeous mosaic with speeches. You get it by confronting reality. Racism is alive.
The boys from Bensonhurst.
Al Sharpton. But we clearly
his behavior and his actions were different than mine.
We must repress our rage, channel our energies, and come together to make this tragedy transforming.
I'm trying to govern an entire city and keep the peace, as it were.
Our lives at stake. We're doing what Dr. King would have done. He would not be hiding behind flags in City Hall. He would do what he did in other cities. He'd be in the street with the victims' mothers, asking for somebody to understand our pain. We may not express it the way you like, but damn it, it's the only way we know how to say it.
All right. For now, how many more marches? How many more marches?
Find out in Brooklyn at the courthouse.
Text appears. May 17th, 1990. FAMA's jury has reached a verdict. In a restaurant, patrons rush around a counter to watch the news.
To read down the list. Joseph Palmer has been found guilty of murder in the second degree, which is depraved murder, depraved indifference to human life.
A headline reads, Fama guilty, second-degree murder.
Yes! Guilty!
Guilty! Joseph Fama cried, but said nothing as Justice Thaddeus Owens announced that the 19-year-old, convicted of killing Yusuf Hawkins, would spend 32 and two-thirds years to life. Fama's father, Rocco, shouted and cursed, most of it in Italian.
You see your parents there, and it was a mess. I guess it would be a mess for any family to see their son getting sentenced for something they didn't do.
Joey lowers his eyes.
It was a strong case. It was upheld on appeal to the appellate division. It was held up on appeal to the Court of Appeals. And I sleep well at night knowing that Joe Fama was convicted and is in jail.
Sharpton and Yusuf's family celebrate outside the court.
That day was a great day then. You know, but that's just a temporary relief. He's going behind cell bars. My brother went in the grave. You don't have the option to breathe no more. You don't have the option to talk anymore. Your mother, she could come see her son.
Moses sits by Diane at a press conference.
It's a great relief that Farmer came out guilty in the killing of my son, Yusuf Hawkins. But that's beyond of what I'm feeling deeply inside for the loss of my son. Because I cannot go to him and touch him and can't be with him and he can't be with his mother.
Text appears. The next day, Mondello's jury has reached a verdict.
There are more shouts. Verdict is coming now. Let's stay with it. Get down on the podium. The verdict is coming now. David Bookstaver will be coming into this room. Here he comes now. Let's listen to David Bookstaver.
David Bookstaver takes the podium and briefly hesitates.
All minutes, we're going now.
The first charge, intentional murder in the second degree, not guilty. Second charge, manslaughter in the first degree, not guilty. Murder in the second degree, depraved indifference, not guilty. Manslaughter in the second degree, not guilty. Riot in the first degree, guilty.
The Hawkins family, along with Al Sharpton, Moses Stewart, Hawkins' mother and father, just went through. They clearly have what they consider to be a travesty of justice.
Black men burn an American flag. Riots break out in the streets, and a blonde woman winces as a black photographer consoles her. Throngs of police and civilians rush toward a commotion by the courthouse. In East New York, Brooklyn, riot police keep watch as the black community protests on Hegeman Avenue.
Keith Mondello got off not guilty. And it was a lot of media on the block, you know, where we grew up.
A news worker prepares while civilians mesh with police.
Certain individuals didn't want to be interviewed because they were so angry.
A camera goes black as the crowd turns hostile.
It got violent. It did.
Our correspondent Ed Miller was later treated for facial cuts, a back injury, and a possible broken nose.
It was a very you know, dark moment, but, you know, I can understand the frustration.
Another television crew fled the scene with the mast on top of the remote truck still up. It struck a power line, causing damage to the truck and blacking out the block.
Sparks rain down as the news van takes off.
While I will be the first to uphold a person's right to demonstrate regarding perceived injustice, I want it to be clear that anyone who abuses that right by engaging in lawless activity will be subject to the fullest legal sanctions.
Sharpton pumps his fist with a group of black men.
I went out and said that we are not the violent ones. We are not people that want equality in depravity.
I don't know how one jury can find Famer guilty and a ringleader not be guilty. It was a very bad night for the Hawkins family, and it's a very bad night for the black community.
Sharpton marches the streets with the community.
I said, don't disparage, don't kill Yusuf's name by reducing him to a cause of a riot.
Slow down.
No peace!
No peace!
No peace!
You ain't got to get up in the
peace!
Make his name resonate, that if people stand up with dignity and persistence, they can get justice. That's what Yusuf's name should represent in history.
Words appear May 19th, 1990, the 9th Bensonhurst March.
A day after Keith Mondello was found not guilty of murder, demonstrators led by the Reverend Al Sharpton marched through a three-block area of Bensonhurst near the spot where 16-year-old Yusuf Hawkins was killed last August.
The 10th Bensonhurst March.
We kept marching because there were still others that were not indicted, and the sentences were not done to the level that we wanted.
The 12th Bensonhurst March.
I looked up civil rights leaders. Sharpton wasn't even on that list. You Google it, he's not even there. Men like that, they do more damage, and maybe they think they're doing good. But when you instigate a neighborhood to prove that the neighborhood is racist, you're not being part of the solution. You're creating more problems.
Yusuf did lose his life because of the color of his skin, but not because Bensonhurst is a racist vigilante neighborhood trying to keep colored people out. That is not true.
The 15th Bensonhurst March.
You know, the no justice, no peace stuff and all that. There was justice. And after justice, there should have been peace.
We will be back! And that is a fact. We will be back. And that is a fact.
Words appear January 11th, 1991, the 20th Bensonhurst March.
We would always go on what they had as a frozen zone behind the school, and the police would line up. And I saw this kind of blurred blue past me.
A man with a mustache lunges past Sharpton.
And I felt somebody like punch me in the chest. And everybody looked and said, "That guy punched Rev."
Sharpton sitting down, holding his chest.
Get an ambulance!
And I looked down and I saw this knife sticking out my chest. When I grabbed it, blood started gushing, and Moses starts screaming, "He hit him! He stabbed him! He's going! Oh, he shot!" Some of our guys grabbed at the guy and started hitting the guy. And the police came and started hitting them to get them off of the guy that stabbed.
Dr. Lenora Fulani uses a megaphone.
All right, Reverend Sharpton is on the way to the hospital. We came out here to march, and we're going to march. They're not going to stop us no matter what they do.
Sharpton's on a gurney surrounded by colleagues.
I remember I'm laying in the recovery room after surgery, and I kind of look up, and I'm still trying to figure out what happened. I don't know how serious it was. I knew I was stabbed, and Dave Dinkins pulled his mask down, and almost immediately, Mayor Dinkins says, "We need you to call for peace." And I teased them later and said that when I woke up out of this and saw y'all, I thought I had died and went to hell.
January 1991, MLK Day.
Some say, why keep marching, even in the face of these attacks? But as long as the killers of Yusuf Hawkins are home, I'm going to march. Yeah. As long as we've got one set of laws in the Brooklyn court for Bensonhurst and another set of laws in the Manhattan court for Central Park, I'm going to march.
Protesters meet in the snow.
As Martin had his men in his day, Jesus had a Peter. Muhammad had an Omar. Well, Sharpton's got a Moses.
Sharpton marches on with the black community.
If we never started marching, if we never started coming together as a community, maybe, just maybe, the outcome would have been different. Maybe nobody wouldn't have went to jail, as far as we know. You know, there's always strength in numbers. We all know that. So I think when you start to get enough people to show support, you're going to get a different outcome. You're going to get a different outcome every time.
Words appear. At the time of his interview, Joseph Fama was serving the 30th year of his 32 years to life sentence. Keith Mondello served 8 years of a 16-year sentence. John Vento served 8 years for lesser charges. Joseph Serrano and Pasquale Rauchi were sentenced to community service. Charles Stressler, James Patino, and Stephen Carreri were acquitted of all charges. Russell Gibbons agreed to testify for the prosecution and was not charged with any crime.
Every last one of them should have got some jail time.
They said only one person shot somebody. But all of them stopped the person. Get the person there. Yeah. If they was black, they would have all got life.
Footage of the street corner that leads to Yusef's townhouse.
After that happened, I was ready to leave then. I was like, I can't do New York. I'm glad I did because, you know, I just needed a breath of fresh air.
Yusef smiles with his brothers and Christopher.
I would rather have my buddy here. You know, but at the same token, you know, life goes on, and I know he wouldn't want me to just sit here not being productive in my life. I owe him to that.
Darlene wipes tears from her eyes.
I don't think you ever get over it. I don't think you ever get over it. And, you know, you have to become either stronger or you let it take you.
A photo of Yusef posing with his brothers Amir and Freddie.
Yusef, he had dreams. He wanted to go, you know, that's why he applied to go to Transit Tech. He might have would have wanted to be an engineer or something, train conductors, things like that, you know. Maybe he would have wanted to play basketball. You know, he had dreams.
A graduation ceremony program dates back to 1989. A yearbook photo shows Yusef in class, and a heart above his head reads, "I love you, son."
I wish that I had more time to grieve for my son's death.
Moses dries Diane's tears.
Because I really didn't grieve. Didn't have time to.
Sharpton's with the family.
Happy birthday, Yusef.
Happy birthday, son.
Because a lot of things was going on, the marches, the courts, the trials.
They visit Yusef's grave.
I was being a little pressured to, like, stop crying, you know, be strong, you know. And I tried. I did what I knew best. But at times, I just broke down. That was me. I was being myself. Moses felt that I was being weak.
A photo of Moses brooding while Diane uses a tissue.
And of course, he was angry. I was, too. I was angry, hurt, devastated, all of that.
Moses wears a shirt with Yusef's face and name.
It was hard to me because I was on my own ever since he left.
Diane's tucked in the crowd.
I mean, you know, he'd come back and try to tell me what to do. It's not for me. I'm my own woman, my own apartment, my name on the lease. Nobody come and tell me what to do. I'm sorry, you know. So he couldn't take that, so he had to go.
Diane arches her brow with a look of resolve.
We went our separate ways.
A photo of Diane and Moses as a dapper young couple. The next picture is of Moses surrounded by his three boys.
It says, I'm not good at writing letters, so this will be sure. I just want to say that I am very proud of you, son. I know we never really had a chance to bond deeply. I have always wanted to be with you and your brothers, Freddie and Yusuf, but things did not work out that way. If you ever need me for anything, please call me or write me or just come to me, son. I will be there for you. Remember, I love you, son, and if you call, I will come. Your father and brother, Moses, Freddie Stewart.
Words appear, Moses Stewart passed away in 2003. At daylight, Luther emerges from the 20th Avenue station and retraces his steps toward the scene of the incident.
For a long time, I always thought I should have died instead of Yusuf.
Luther strolls the neighborhood with his hands in his pockets.
One day, I kind of woke up and looked in the mirror, and I could hear Yusuf's voice like, "What are you doing?"
Luther lingers on the sidewalk where Yusuf was killed.
I'm like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "This is not you. You survived. And keep on living. Do the best you can for you. And just keep me in your heart and keep me in your memory."
The photo of Yusuf at the gate with a subtle smile on his face.
He's going to live on through all of us. He's going to live on through all of us. And, you know, we're not going to let him go away. He's not going to go away.
In the city, Diane visits a hand-painted mural of her late son. His face spans across a brick wall and is encircled with white flowers. His name, Yusuf Hawkins, is in bold cursive in a pink and white gradient. Diane takes in the artwork for a moment, then kisses her hands and waves to Yusuf. Amir and Freddie join Diane for a picture in front of the mural. The boys embrace their mom, with Yusuf's visage prominent behind them.
Come forward, guys. This is even better. I like to see it more.
Yusuf's cousins join the family in front of the painting.
Very nice. Let me get a few more.
Christopher and Luther step in from opposite ends and unite with the others. Yusuf's loved ones stand united in a bittersweet family photo.
Looking at me? Looking good, guys. Let's keep that going.
In front of the mural, Yusuf's family grows in each photo taken. Text appears over a black background, dedicated in honor of Yusuf K. Hawkins. Yusuf's community huddles together as they chant. Many hands join in carrying a wreath of white flowers that surround Yusuf's serene face. Fade to black. Directed by Muta Ali. Producers Javon Frank, Victorious DaCosta, and Muta Ali. Credits continue. Copyright 2019 Lightbox Media Limited. All rights reserved. First publication of this motion picture, sound recording, and film, United States of America 2019. Lightbox Media Limited is the owner of the copyright in this motion picture. This motion picture is protected by the copyright laws of the United States of America and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication, copying, or use of all or part of this motion picture may result in civil liability and/or criminal prosecution in accordance with applicable laws. Audio description provided by Point360. Written by Court Soto and voiced by Tansy Alexander. A logo appears in a black and white rectangle. Lightbox. Words are etched in stone on a purple background. ABFF Studios. A red firework explodes over a lake house. Nightbrain Pictures. in association with Marion Frank Media and Teal Octopus Productions, a presentation of Home Box Office.